Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Amdocs Q3 2015 earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require operator assistance, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, today's conference call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Matthew Smith, Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Candice. Before we begin, I would like to point out that during this call, we will discuss certain financial information that is not prepared in accordance with GAAP. The company's management uses this financial information in its internal analysis in order to exclude the effects of acquisitions and other significant items that may have a disproportionate effect in a particular period. Accordingly, management believes that isolating the effects of such events enables management and investors to consistently analyze the critical components of results of operations of the company's business and to have a meaningful comparison to prior periods. For more information regarding our use of non-GAAP financial measures, including reconciliations of these measures, we refer you to today's earnings release, which will also be furnished with the SEC on Form 6-K. Also, this call includes information that constitutes forward-looking statements. Although we believe the expectations reflected in such forward-looking statements are based upon reasonable assumptions, we can give no assurance that our expectations will be obtained or that any deviations will not be material. Such statements involve risks and uncertainties that may cause future results to differ from those anticipated. These risks include, but are not limited to, the effects of general economic conditions and such other risks as discussed in our earnings release today and at greater length in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission, including in our annual report on Form 20-F for the fiscal year ended September 30, 2014, filed on December 8, 2014, our Form 6-K furnished for the first quarter of fiscal 2015 on February 9, 2015, and our Form 6-K furnished for the second fiscal quarter of 2015 on May 11, 2015. Amdocs may elect to update these forward-looking statements at some point in the future. However, the company specifically disclaims any obligation to do so. Participating on the call with me today are Eli Gellman, President and Chief Executive Officer of Amdocs Management Limited, and Tamar Rapaport-Dagim, Chief Financial Officer. With that, I'll turn it over to Eli.
Thank you, Matt, and good afternoon to everyone joining us on the call today. We are pleased with our solid results for the third fiscal quarter and the continued progress we have made executing on our various growth initiatives. These include the launch of Amdocs CES 9.3, expanding our product set to bring new functionality around online commerce, interactive build, care, big data marketing, and network analytics, maintaining a healthy win rate amongst our competitors, and renewal of several managed services agreements while also expanding the scope of those customer relationships. Additionally, our long-term strategy to penetrate new customers and geographies resulted in a second consecutive quarter of record revenue in rest of the world. As usual, let me first provide some regional color with respect to the company activity in the third quarter. Beginning with North America, performance was affected by uncertainty resulting from the consolidation activity, the potential impact of which we have discussed with you several times in the recent quarters. North American market dynamics supported growth at several customers, but the slower regulatory environment translated into holding pattern behavior with some others. Specific among them was AT&T, where we saw some signs of hesitation in certain discretionary programs that we believe mainly related to the protracted approval process for its merger with DirecTV, which was finally completed last week. It is too early to say exactly how AT&T plans will evolve in the next few quarters, but we remain confident in the value and the service we can provide AT&T over the long term. Now that the DirecTV merger has been approved, we will continue working hard to demonstrate our world-class product functionality to AT&T, as well as our capabilities in areas such as system consolidation, migration, and realization of synergies. Naturally, DirecTV is not the only component of AT&T's growth strategy, and we have recently been working to support AT&T in some other of its new initiatives. For instance, in the area of prepaid and no-contract offerings, Amdocs continues to support Cricket Wireless as a relationship that began 2 years ago when AT&T Aio Wireless selected Amdocs for its IT support. To summarize North America, I would say the long-term market dynamics remain favorable, but our immediate outlook still holds many moving parts and unknowns, which may cause revenue to fluctuate in the coming quarters. Additionally, we remain subject to customer consolidation deals currently in progress or which may be contemplated among wireless and pay TV operators in North America. Moving to Europe, we saw normal fluctuations in customer activity, which overall performance in line with our expectations. During the quarter, we strengthened long-term relationships with some of the region's largest service providers. For instance, Bulgaria's MTEL, a subsidiary of Telekom Austria Group, which is controlled by América Móvil, has expanded and extended its multi-year managed services engagement through to 2021. MDOX will assume responsibility for MTEL's entire BSS operations across four lines of businesses, including some of MTEL's legacy and third-party business support systems. We also focused on strategic markets, including Russia, where we successfully deployed an MDOX customer management solution for Vimpelcom to improve call center agent efficiency, boost call center revenues, and increase customer satisfaction and retention rates. Looking ahead, we believe our product and service offering position us for the long-term growth in Europe. But at the same time, we must be cognizant of the regional macro and regulatory conditions, which we expect to remain challenging over the next few quarters. Turning finally to the rest of the world, we are delighted to report a second consecutive quarter of revenue, record revenue, and a meticulous execution bringing large and highly complex modernization projects towards production on behalf of our customers. Let me take a moment to add some color about our recent activity in the rest of the world. In Taiwan, MDOX has just completed the migration of Far EasTone prepaid subscribers to an advanced MDOX charging and billing system. This is part of a larger charging and billing modernization program announced in April last year, in which Far EasTone selected MDOX product and services to modernize its charging and billing systems with real-time capabilities and capabilities to support launch of 4G LTE services in Taiwan. As part of this project, MDOX will also migrate Far EasTone postpaid customers onto an upgraded MDOX system. During the third quarter, we also won important strategic awards within new lines of businesses, such as MDOX Mobile Financial Services, where our solution was selected by a subsidiary of one of the world's largest mobile operators to drive financial inclusion in its markets in Southeast Asia. Regarding our outlook in the rest of the world, we continue to see positive long-term growth trajectory ahead, although we remind you that sequential trends are likely to remain lumpy given the project orientation of our customers' engagement in this region. Now let me take a moment to update you on our acquisition of the Commerce BSS assets, which we closed shortly after the end of the third quarter. First, the integration process is now underway, and we are committed to ensure business continuity and support of all dimensions of the customers' relationships we acquired from Commerce. Along these lines, a leading service provider in Latin America recently upgraded its business support system based on Commerce Kingdom technology we acquired to deliver new services, reduce costs, and support of its growing customer base. At the same time, we have now turned our attention towards building a pipeline for opportunities for cross-sell and upsell to the customer base that we acquired from Commerce. This build-up naturally takes time, but we are confident that our superior offering and world-class services can be beneficiary for these customers. To wrap up, we are pleased with our performance in the third fiscal quarter. Our win rate for the year-to-date has been strong, and we remain focused on our operational execution in all areas, including product development, delivery, employee recruitment, and retention. Uncertainty persists in all markets, primarily as a result of a consolidation activity. But in general, we feel competitively well-positioned and therefore ready to benefit as trends improve. Overall, we now expect to deliver diluted non-GAAP earnings per share growth for the full fiscal year 2015 towards the midpoint of our previously guided range of 4.5% to 7.5%. Incorporating this guidance is our commitment to the balanced and proactive allocation of capital over the short and long term. With the Converse transaction behind us and in recognition of our strong cash flow generated in Q3, we plan to return cash to shareholders at levels substantially above that suggested by our flexible 50/50 free cash flow allocation framework in quarter four. At the same time, we'd like to retain significant capacity to fund additional M&A, which we intend to do when we find the right strategic opportunities at the right price and time. With that, let me turn the call over to Tamar.
Thank you, Eli. I'll begin with our third fiscal quarter revenue, which was in line with the midpoint of our expectations on a constant currency basis. Third fiscal quarter revenue of $908 million included a small positive impact from foreign currency fluctuations of about $1 million relative to the second fiscal quarter of 2015, while our third quarter guidance range embedded a negative sequential impact of approximately $2 million. So revenue performance was therefore in line with the midpoint of our expectations after adjusting for the additional positive impact of foreign currency fluctuations. Our third fiscal quarter non-GAAP operating margin was 17.1%, an increase of 10 basis points compared to the second fiscal quarter of 2015, and towards the high end of our long-term target range of 16.2% to 17.2%. Below the operating line, non-GAAP net interest and other expense was $1 million in Q3. For forward-looking purposes, we continue to expect the non-GAAP net interest and other expense in the range of a few million dollars quarterly due to foreign currency fluctuations. Diluted non-GAAP EPS was 84 cents in Q3 compared to a guidance range of 79 to 85 cents. Our non-GAAP effective tax rate of 14.9% in Q3 was within our expected annual range of 13 to 15%. Free cash flow was strong at $190 million in Q3. This was comprised of cash flow from operations of approximately $222 million, less $32 million in net capital expenditures and other. As a reminder, over the long term, free cash flow tends to convert at a rate on par with our non-GAAP net income. DSO 74 days were flat with the prior quarter. This is consistent with our historic range. Total unbilled receivables were down by $7 million as compared to the second fiscal quarter of 2015. Our total deferred revenue, short and long term, decreased by $12 million sequentially in Q3. As indicated in the past, both of these items may fluctuate from quarter to quarter. Our cash balance at the end of the third fiscal quarter was approximately $1.4 billion. Please note that this balance does not reflect the acquisition of Converse BSS assets, which was closed on July 2nd for $273 million in cash. Our 12-month backlog, which includes anticipated revenue related to contracts, estimated revenue for managed services contracts, letters of intent, maintenance, and estimated ongoing support activities, was $3.01 billion at the end of third fiscal quarter, up $10 million sequentially. Backlog for Q3 does not include a contribution from Converse BSS assets since this transaction did not close until shortly after the end of the quarter. During the third fiscal quarter, we repurchased $60 million of our ordinary shares under our current $750 million authorization plan. We had $442 million remaining under this authorization as of June 30. Now, turning to our outlook, we expect revenue to be within a range of $915 million to $955 for the fourth fiscal quarter of 2015. Embedded within this guidance, we anticipate minimal sequential impact from foreign currency fluctuations as compared to Q3, and a contribution in the low tens of millions of dollars from the consolidation of the Converse BSS assets. For the full fiscal year, we now expect total revenue growth will track towards the midpoint of our previously stated range of 2.5% to 5.5% year over year on a constant currency basis, relative to when we initially provided this guidance on November 4, 2014. As a reminder, this range already included an anticipated drag from foreign currency fluctuations of about 1% based on exchange rate prevailing at the end of our fourth quarter fiscal 2014. Forecasting reported revenue accurately for the full fiscal year 2015 remains challenging as a result of continued volatility in foreign currency markets. However, based on what we know, as of the end of Q3, We expect reported revenue growth in the range of 2-3% year-over-year for the full fiscal year 2015. This outlook includes a negative impact from foreign currency fluctuations of about 3% year-over-year, as well as the previously mentioned contribution from the Converse Business assets. Also within this outlook, and consistent with our prior expectation, we anticipate revenue from our directory business in fiscal 2015 to decrease in double-digit percentage range, placing a drag of about 1% on total company results. We anticipate our non-GAAP operating margin for fiscal Q4 2015 to be within our long-term target range of 16.2-17.2%. As expected, this outlook includes a modest sequential headwind in Q4 resulting from the consolidation of the Converse BSS assets. Beyond Q4, we remind you that operating margins may fluctuate within our long-term target range from quarter to quarter. We expect the fourth fiscal quarter diluted non-GAAP EPS to be within the range of 79 to 85 cents. As a reminder, our effective tax rate was unusually low in the first fiscal quarter. We expect our non-GAAP effective tax rate to remain within the target range of 13 to 15% for the full fiscal year 2015, which implies our tax rate in Q4 will be above the high end of our target range by a couple of points. Our fourth fiscal quarter non-GAAP EPS guidance also incorporates an expected average diluted share count of roughly 157 million shares and the likelihood of a negative impact from foreign currency fluctuations in non-GAAP net interest and other expense. We excluded the impact of incremental future share buyback activity during the fourth fiscal quarter as the level of activity will depend on market conditions. For the full fiscal year 2015, we are narrowing our expected diluted non-GAAP EPS growth rate towards the midpoint of our previously guided range of 4.5-7.5% year-over-year. As Eli mentioned in his prepared remarks, and based on what we know as of today, we plan to return cash to shareholders at levels substantially above that suggested by our 50-50 framework in the fourth fiscal quarter. Our fourth fiscal quarter diluted non-GAAP EPS guidance and our full fiscal year 2015 diluted non-GAAP EPS growth guidance incorporates in the consolidation of the Converse business assets, but excludes at least 9 cents per share of one-time restructuring charges related to Converse, net of the related tax effect. Based on current estimates, we continue to expect that Converse will be neutral to non-GAAP earnings per share in the first full year following completion of the deal, and accretive thereafter. With that, we can turn it back now to the operator to begin our question and answer session.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen on the phone lines, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star followed by the number one key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Due to time constraints, we do ask that you please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. And our first question comes from the line of S.K. Prasadabora from Goldman Sachs. Your line is now open.
Thanks for taking my question. Couple, if I may. First, to probably start off on the Converse BSS acquisition, can you give us a final split of revenues which you're recognizing across various geographies?
We are not providing this granularity in terms of the revenue breakdown, but I can tell you that their customer base and accordingly the revenue was very complementary to the Amdocs prior to the acquisition. As you know, we are having the majority of our revenue in North America, then Europe and rest of the world has been a growing region for us. And then Converse is bringing actually something that is almost like a mirror, bringing revenue in CALA, in APAC, and the majority of the revenue is actually coming in Europe, which is complementary, both in revenue and more importantly, in new customers that were not part of our own customer base and now present an upsell and cross-sell opportunity for the new offering we can bring to the table.
As a matter of fact, like two-thirds, maybe 70% of the customers do not overlap our customers. So we're talking about dozens and dozens of customers that we're getting with this acquisition and the opportunity to serve them and then to provide better services and new product and capabilities that Commerce did not have. And that's why we believe that this deal is going to be a good one.
And probably on the remark you made around for the first 12 months, you expect the deal to be earnings neutral. Can you provide some guide on what kind of operating margins are you assuming? Are you planning any cost reductions, any cost rationalization? Any color would be very helpful.
Sure. So as we said explicitly in Q4, we think it will be modestly negative in terms of the impact on the operating margin. But as you can see, even though this is the case, we can maintain our annual guidance for the EPS, and we are tracking towards midpoint. So yes, it has some impact, and obviously over time we expect things to improve as we create the right synergies and the upsell opportunities will come along. But like any sales cycle, these things can take time. So probably we'll start having an impact in terms of synergy on the top line more towards Q3 and probably even Q4 of next year. And regarding specifically on fiscal 16 and the guidance for next year, I think we'll have to wait until we give as a whole the guidance for the company.
So a better way to think about this is for the first half of the next 12 months, you're probably expecting the deal to be slightly dilutive on earnings, and second half...
I don't want you to take it too technically because, you know, it sounds like we have a very schematic projection now with a crystal ball, exactly how things will be in each one of the quarters. So it's portraying too much of an accurate picture. But over time, we should see improvement. That would be the more accurate way to say it.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Ashwin Shirvaikar of Citi. Your line is now open.
Thank you, guys. Good quarter. My question is, you know, as you look at the Converse asset that you acquired...
Sorry. It's not possible to hear you.
Is this better?
Try again.
Can you hear me now?
I don't think we can hear well. Can you try from another phone, maybe?
Can you hear me now?
Let's try again and see if we can understand.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. So I guess the question is with regards to just the long-term potential from Converse, given that, at least my impression from looking at it, is that they underinvested in product for a variety of reasons. You can bring a better product portfolio to their customers. What is the overall opportunity set that they kind of left on the table? It's not a 2016 number, but overall, what can you do with the asset that you acquired?
So thanks for the question, and sorry for the technical aspect of it, but we could not hear it before because of the static. As for the long-term view on the Converse deal, the best way to look at it is that we're getting access to dozens of customers. Vast majority of them would be the customer that we will pursue, and in a way we get the opportunity to talk and serve this customer and serve them better. And Compass, in a way, you can think about it as a revenue management engine, more about the charging and billing and aspects like this. But this is probably maybe one-fourth of, or maybe even less of our offering. So first of all, in terms of the product set, we can upsell and cross-sell the customer management, the self-service, dealership, CRM application from call centers all the way to e-commerce. Then we have the network application. Then we have the OSS application, and so on and so forth. So we can definitely expand dramatically the product set. The second layer would be services. On each one of the product set that we just talked about, including revenue management, Commerce would stay away from services. They could not generate the revenue or the quality that is required, and therefore they would provide the minimum services, whereas we actually provide the maximum services possible because we like to have the accountability and the overall responsibility for a service set. regardless if it's ongoing support or transformation or adding capabilities and so forth, all the way to managed services. They have very little managed services, and we offer managed services to about 50% of our revenue comes from managed services. So when you think about the potential in all dimensions of product, services, managed services, and general capability, we believe that the opportunity that the Comverse represent for us, or that this acquisition, is quite significant. The only reason why we are cautious a little bit in the beginning is, A, we are just acquiring the company. We are going through the post-merger integration. Most of the people we got, the engineers are in Boston and New Jersey, which are very comfortable for us. Some other people are in India and other places. So we are accommodating all these engineers right now and accepting them into the company. We are building the pipeline for the future across the absence, which takes some time, probably measured in quarters. But altogether, from the initial signs we got and the first few purchase orders that we signed right after the acquisition, we are quite bullish on this acquisition.
No, that's very detailed, and thank you for those buckets in which to think about them. The second question is with regards to AT&T DirecTV, I guess, in particular. Does it present any opportunity for you in terms of product upsell?
Yes, definitely. Everything that AT&T does represents opportunity for us because we have this long-term relationship with them and a very established credibility with AT&T throughout the years on product set and on execution. DirecTV specifically is of an interest for us. Today we are providing some revenue management billing component of the legacy DirecTV, but no customer management, and this acquisition most likely would have to be built upon the notion of streamlining back-end systems. There is, we don't believe that AT&T DirecTV can present and execute a smooth transformation of customer base as well as the synergies that are expected without a well-established back-end consolidation. We hope to prove to AT&T that we are the best partner in this domain. We have a lot of credit with AT&T, both on the product and their capabilities in this regard, because we have been their partner for many years, throughout the years of other consolidation activities that they had. Obviously, at the same time, we're trying to work with AT&T and to provide or kind of convince them that we can help them in their activities south of the border, which is mainly Mexico. And at last, we can basically tell you that we are now serving them on the prepaid, on the Cricket deal, something that we started quite some time ago, but something that we can release on it today.
That's great to hear. Thank you and congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Shaul Eyal of Oppenheimer. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Tamar, Ellie, and Matt.
Hi.
Ellie, maybe also on the heels of Ashwin's prior question, I want to relate to your AT&T comment you've made during the prepared remarks. If I'm not mistaken, please forgive me if I am, I think you've used the terms a little bit of hesitation by AT&T. And, you know, you from everybody, you have known AT&T probably for more than 25 years now. Is this hesitation specifically related to the near-term, you know, potential bumps driven by the DirecTV, or, you know, just typical macro concerns?
So, Shaul, thanks for the question. I think that also in the prepared remark, I referred to it that we believe that it's primarily related to the slow, you know, approval process of the DirecTV deal. When such a major deal is hanging in the air, obviously a lot of discretionary programs take a different priority. We believe it is part of this, and we'll know only in a few quarters from now, but that's our belief. Again, based on the intimate relationship we have with AT&T. AT&T by no means is hesitating to go and attack the market. So I think it's in context of specific deal. And now that the deal has been approved, we hope that it will go back to higher expansion and more projects on the discretionary project. We have to emphasize that it's all new discretionary project. We are not talking about any hesitation on day-to-day, on operation, on ongoing mobility projects and stuff like this. So we're talking about the new project, the potential project, and so on. So it's quite natural. And we've seen it, by the way, before a few years ago. Eventually it did not go through, but we saw the same thing towards the decision about T-Mobile, projected deal at that time. So we don't think it's something so unnatural, but this is the reality, and we're dealing with this reality. At the same time, we are actively pursuing opportunities that are being accelerated, like obviously they made the acquisition of IUSACEL and they are active in Mexico, and we're trying to be relevant and helpful in these projects. The cricket we've done and the DirecTV is now completely new.
Got it. This is great clarification. Thank you for that. Tamar, I think you've also mentioned Amdocs' intention to potentially return cash substantially above your planned 50-50 plan. Is it something in the neighborhood of, I think, the 80% you've returned, if I'm not mistaken, 2-3 quarters ago, most likely? Should we be thinking along these lines, give or take?
I don't want to commit necessarily to a number, but if you look on, as we were preparing for the Converse acquisition and we're kind of reorganizing our cash, we were relatively light in Q3, and even with this light activity overall on accumulated basis, I think we're already over 70. So it will not be a stretch to get much higher, let me put it this way. And definitely we're encouraged by the continued free cash flow performance that has been going well. And of course, we continue to push forward on this machine, on collections, on making sure we continue to generate the cash and make the right allocation of the capital thereafter.
Got it. This is great. Thank you so much. Good luck.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Mark Su of RBC. Your line is now open.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking our call. This is Spencer from Mark Su. You talked quite a bit about consolidation and customer dynamics, but could you talk a little bit about the competitive environment, who you're seeing out there for deals, and then as well as some of the pricing dynamics that you might be seeing for some of the renewals that you mentioned you won during the quarter, and also how that might compare to new contracts that you're going after?
So, Spencer, thanks for the question. In terms of the competitive landscape, I think that in the prepared remark we relate to it as that we are relatively comfortable with our competitive position all in all regions. Our win rate year to date has been strong, maybe even very strong. We cannot have 100% market share of new business or anything close to it, but it has been very strong. And I would say more than that, even in the few cases when customers are going with some of our competitors, we always have a chance to come back to it because the execution of this project is completely different story in comparison to the sales of it. You know, you can always drop the price and be very aggressive and bundle it with something and win. But it's a very different story when it comes to execution, and we have seen it. We are seeing it today. We have seen it in the past. That's reality. So I think that both our winning capabilities and win rate is very high, but also our ability to execute a win to production is basically 100%. It's almost guaranteed, if you can call it this way. Our competitors' win rate is low, and the execution after winning is very low. So this is kind of the competitive environment, and it's quite broad comment to all of our competitors. As a matter of fact, the only few guys that managed from time to time to do, you know, to carry a project was Comverse, but now it's part of MDocs. So in terms of the pricing and renewal and so on and so forth, look, we are providing mission critical systems. We always have to be cognizant to the fact that we improve our operation as time goes by, so we are getting to a better EBIT or operating margins at the end of the contracts, and it's kind of customary to give a little bit back to the customer. What usually we are doing is that since we are expanding throughout this period of the contract, they are offering the capabilities, we usually translate it, the renewal into an opportunity to cross-sell and upsell and expand the capability. And that's why we are usually saying, and it's not a nuance, it's a big topic, that we are extending but also expanding our relationship with customers. And price is usually not the major factor. We are not a price related company. This may be our competitors. In terms of new contracts, look, it has always been a competitive environment. It has always been the case that we are not winning on price. Sometimes we are more aggressive, sometimes we are less, but usually we win on value and on the fact that we can execute, so the risk is low. And when you calculate usually the risk to fail a project with someone else, not with us, and the capability that we have in terms of functionality and richness and the services, and you compound with that our experience of actually doing this day in and day out, this is usually the winning combination. Just to give an idea, we are producing major milestones, go-live milestones, in the rate of about 30, 35 a quarter. This is a huge achievement that very few IT companies can actually talk about even. So this is more than 120 a year. Major milestones for major carriers that rely on our software. It's quite, you're getting quite used to, quite experienced when you do that. So altogether, price is usually not the leading factor for us.
Great, appreciate it. Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Tom Roderick of Stifel. Your line is now open.
Hey guys, good afternoon. So in looking at the operating margins, Tamar, you've gotten right up near the high end of your sort of longer term range at 15.2 to 17.2, so kind of butting up against the high end of that already. And I hear you talking about some accretion as we look out, a year into the Comverse deal. Is there a potential for you to sort of, bump that margin, those longer-term margin targets up? And how do we think about some of the puts and takes with other managed, longer-term managed services contracts as they come up for renewal and expiration over the next several years as it impacts the margins?
Thanks, Tom. I want to be clear. EPS opportunity for accretion after the first year post the deal closure is not necessarily coming from margin expansion. It's coming from top-line synergies at a good margin. So that's the main opportunity we're seeing here, again, going back to Ali's comments about the customer base we're taking and the opportunities of coming to this customer base with the rich offering of Amdocs, both from the product and services. Of course, the thesis is this translates to revenue and then to the bottom line. In terms of the margin per se, in the immediate term, and we spoke about Q4 specifically, actually Comverse is going to put a modest margin pressure. I don't think it's anything that we should worry about, because as we move along and we get into the right cost structure as well as this opportunity to continue and upsell things, we can still be within our regular range. So I don't think it's taking us anywhere out of that in any sense. And that was the comment that I was trying to make. I hope that's clearer now. In general, going back to your managed services question, look, about half of the revenue of the company is already under managed services arrangements. That means that we have customers in which the majority of activities under a managed services agreement. There could be some discretionary spending always in these customers that are counted in these numbers as well. But we see over time, and then we have enough mileage by now, to go through this expansion and extension cycles that Eli mentioned, to create on the one hand the cost improvements and the efficiencies and the operational excellence, and on the other end to continue and bring value to the customer and by that try and expand the envelope in terms of what we do within any one of these engagements, which is creating the balance over time on how to protect the margins. But yes, there could be specific points in a given arrangement with a customer where we go from a margin of X to slightly down as we renegotiate and then get it up again. So there could be some cycles like that within any given deal. But we need to remember at the end of the day, we have a portfolio of many deals that are comprising the top line and the margin of the company.
That's great feedback. Thank you. Eli, quick follow-up for you in terms of a topic I don't think we've spent too much time talking about this call or lately, but the emerging markets, still a nice growth opportunity for you. Can you kind of provide an update, particularly in light of some recent macro changes and developments around the world, but particularly in some emerging markets? How is that impacting your business? What's the opportunity look like, and what's the execution look like in that segment of the business?
So Tom, in general, we look at the emerging markets, and we have been looking at the emerging markets for quite some time as a significant growth engine for the company. I'm not sure that 30% year over year or 27 or whatever is sustainable necessarily, but the double digit is, and that was the overall thesis, and we're executing right now a little bit better than that, and we see opportunities in the emerging markets. Of any kind and sort, and this is the beautiful thing about it, because we proved that our product set are the relevant one and the best one there. We proved that services of the quality that provide are appreciated and needed. We proved that managed services is possible, and as a result, we also became a significant player in this market, both Latin America, Central America, Southeast Asia, and the like. Including developed and the emerging components of this of these regions. So the way we look at it right now is that the more established that we are becoming, we're supposed to keep on penetrating this market. So if we have one customer in a given region, we would try to go to the second one or the third one. In North America, to remind you, we are working with almost everyone. The same goes in England, the same goes in many other markets of the world, and we want to imitate the same thing in other places. And we continue to see as such opportunities in every aspect of the business. Our competitive position is also quite strong. Again, we cannot get 100% market share and what have you, but our position against all the rest of the competitors in this market is very strong. And as these markets are moving in the food chain from simple prepaid to converged prepaid and postpaid to the customer experience, all the way to some markets going into the most modern digital-first thesis, which is basically providing all the customer management online self-service, e-commerce, and becoming almost an internet company, our offering is already there. So we don't see a difference between offering this newest technology to AT&T or Telefonica or Vodafone and providing it to some carriers in the emerging market or the rest of the world in general. So altogether, we see strong pipeline, we see good execution. We think we ticked all the boxes and we should enjoy this investment that we've done in the last few years and keep monetizing it. I just want to remind you that most of these activities are project-related. These are regions that behave a little bit differently, so lumpiness it should be expected, and we should not be, too worried about them right now. We are not getting out of our way in terms of celebration when we have a very good few quarters. It may slow down, but altogether, we are very bullish about the rest of the world.
That's great detail. Thank you, Eli. Nice job.
Thank you, Jim. Tom.
Thank you. And as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star followed by the number one key on your touchtone telephone. And our next question comes from Will Power of Robert Baird. Your line is now open.
Great. Thanks for taking the question. Maybe first just a clarification. Tamar, did you give us the Converse contribution and the Q4 revenue guidance?
We're talking about the low tens of millions of dollars per quarter. Just to remind you, as they were reporting a standalone segment, the revenue has been continually going down. I think the last quarter they reported on a standalone basis was already in the 40s. And first of all, we are not acquiring all of the assets that they had in that segment. And B, we are going through purchase accounting adjustments that are actually trimming some of the deferred revenue they could enjoy. So our starting base is somewhat lower. And the idea, of course, is over time, as we push the whole rationale of the deal towards the upsell opportunities, to start getting it higher.
Yeah, no, understand that part. Okay, and then the second question, just coming back to North America and looking at some of the weakness there, I guess I just want to be clear. I mean, is that really entirely AT&T and the pause you're seeing there, which presumably should reverse at at some point, or are there other sources of weakness, either Sprint, the Canadian carriers, anything else you might call out you're seeing in North America that might be negatively impacting you?
So it's never only one thing, because that would not be mathematically accurate, but it's the vast majority of the impact is around AT&T. As a matter of fact, we've seen some growth in a few other customers at the same time. So it's this environment that, and again, there is a very clear explanation to that, and then we expect it to go away over time now that this specific deal has been approved. By the way, it's not only the impact of the disapproval of AT&T only, because it's the market dynamics that may change, because I would expect that the entire pay TV industry will take it quite seriously, because AT&T with DirecTV is a completely different animal. It's a strong player in the pay TV industry. We didn't have it for a long time in North American market. So I would, and we're talking about Charter, gearing up to buy one or two companies. So we hopefully should see some movement, and some movement translate into some projects, hopefully with MDOX, of the pay TV industry, and maybe that will be the beginning of a bigger swing of activity. So obviously we are relating right now to the stuff that we know, which is within the AT&T context, and that's why I'm saying it's a majority, but it may have an effect on other things as well in North America.
Okay, thanks. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Jason Kupferberg of Jefferies. Your line is now open.
Hi, guys. This is Amit Singh for Jason Kupferberg. Just wanted to quickly talk about your capital deployment plan. I know you talked about M&A, that you're going to continuously look into any available target. So I want to talk about size that you're looking at. Are you primarily going to be focusing on tuck-in type acquisitions, or we could even see some bigger transformational type acquisition from you guys?
So, Amit, we have said more than once that we are not limiting ourselves to the size. We're just limiting ourselves to the strategic rationale and to the ability to execute the deal, and mainly the post-merger integration. We've been very careful about this throughout the years, and therefore we have a very good track record in buying technology companies. And we've bought throughout the years technology. Converse is about customer base, so it's basically consolidation. We bought our way into, the pay TV industry. So, and we're doing some acquisition that will accelerate our activity in certain markets. So we are open to anything, technology, people, diversification, all of the above. So, and the size, as long as it makes sense. So we should not expect us to pay, billions of dollars for something that is hype and does not, generate revenue and EBIT. If we will go to the big deals, we'll go after things that have revenue and real EBIT. We just believe in it. And if we go into the smaller deals, it will come with a certain characteristics and anything in between. So it's more about the strategy and the size and the price accordingly will be according to the quality of what we are buying and the ability to generate revenue and EBIT for Amdocs.
All right, perfect. And just quickly, if you could, you know, you have previously highlighted network optimization as one of the avenue of growth, and I believe, you know, a few quarters ago you had even said that it could be about $100 million plus revenue this year. So just wanted to get a sense of how that business, or, you know, the growth in that business is playing out, and what is your expectation going forward from here?
So network software in general, including network optimization, is moving along well. It's lumpy because the deals there are not so smooth, I would say, in terms of the deals, the deal flow, not the execution. So we see progress. We actually expanding the offering. So it's not only, in specifically in the network optimization, it's not only around the product that we acquired. We are now talking about more services, a broader view of the problem, not only the radio optimization, other network optimization as well. And as we talk about that, we're also trying to make our first moves into the network virtualization, which is even the bigger potential in this network software space. But it's slow, you know. We are executing on some development. We have some dialogue with some customers, but these are completely new topics. So the ones that we have already are progressing well. The new ones are a big unknown. And what we are learning is that it is as lumpy as many other projects.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm showing no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Matthew Smith for closing remarks.
Thank you very much for joining our call this evening and for your continued interest in Amdocs. We look forward to hearing from you in the coming days. And if you do have any additional questions, please call the Investor Relations Group. Have a great evening. And with that, we'll conclude the call.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This does conclude the program, and you may all disconnect. Have a great day, everyone.